The Australian author Mark Brandy has had a pretty wonderful writing career so far, really the kind that other writers dream of. His debut novel Wimmera was a hugely popular book with readers and critics, winning the Debut Dagger Award from the British Crime Writers Association and being named Best Debut at the 2018 Indie Book Awards. Now he's back with his second book, The Rip, an urban crime drama about a homeless woman navigating life on the streets of Melbourne. She's scraping by, but when she and her friend Anton are invited to move into the house of the menacing Steve, we all wonder what the smell is behind his locked door. Mark Brandy, great to have you here.
Thanks, Claire. Great to be here.
You have a degree in criminal justice. You've spent a lot of your career working in the justice system. Were you always destined to be a crime writer?
It seems that way, doesn't it? I've kind of been surrounded by crime stories pretty much my whole life in some respects, and I've got three older brothers who all work for Victoria Police, so it's been part of my professional life, but also my personal life. My partner, she works at the county court, so I'm getting told this stuff all the time. But I suppose I've always been drawn to crime stories too, kind of true crime stories, and I think it presents such a an interesting insight into humanity and human behaviour. But in terms of being a crime writer, it's an odd thing, and it's a bit of a confession for me here now. But before I wrote Wimmera, I'd actually never read any crime fiction.
So really,
it's true. And I sat down and wrote that story because I felt like I wanted to talk about those characters, and in some ways it was inevitable that it would feature a crime. And I think that the Rip is probably similar in some respects, that I kind of see it as a story about crime in some ways, or about a crime, but perhaps not necessarily fitting some of the tropes of the genre either.
Absolutely. This is all making sense to me now, Mark, because reading your book, I thought, this isn't a Agatha Christie book. This isn't a whodunit. This is a story about someone, and there's kind of a crime happening in the background almost.
Yeah. And I guess I mean, in my writing, I want to talk about, some of the deeper social issues going on. And in some respects, I don't want to think of like crime as being a Trojan horse, but in some ways it is, because if it gets people to read the story on one level, even if they read it just straight as a crime story, that's fine by me. But if they're being immersed in some of these broader social issues, or these broader lessons, I suppose, about the world, then that's something that I'm happy with. But in talking about this book in particular, I'm really conscious that I don't want to prescribe what people take from it either. It's just, I see reading as a very personal relationship between a reader and a book and the author. And I don't want to sort of say, there's a message here or.
No, this book is not medicine.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So in this book, you're talking about the world of homelessness. Our protagonist is a young homeless woman living on the streets of Melbourne. How did you, I know we've talked about your association with crime, but how did you get an insight into this world of homelessness?
I probably reflected on this more afterwards in some ways, because when I sat down to write this character, in her voice almost came to me fully formed. So that first scene where we meet her in the book, of her waking up in the park with Anton and their dog Sunny, that's the very first scene I wrote, and I didn't really have a set idea of where the book was going at that stage. I was just really discovering her world, but looking back on it, I guess I've spent all my adult life in the inner city of Melbourne, and particularly over the last few years, noticed homelessness becoming more visible, as it has in a lot of metropolitan areas, both in Australia, around the world, and also heroin becoming a bigger issue, particularly in Melbourne, particularly in Victoria Street in Richmond. And I guess I've always been kind of drawn to people who are on the margins. I've been drawn to their stories and kind of open to their world in some ways. And I think that actually goes back a long way back to when I was growing up as a kid, because I grew up in a country pub, and I was kind of surrounded by addiction, both alcohol addiction and drug addiction as well. And I never really had a judgmental lens about that. And, you know, one of the things my dad always said to me when he was making me work behind the bar against my will was that, you know, you talk to people. It doesn't matter where they're from or their background, just have a chat to them. And one of the things that I found, it was just a really important life lesson, is that people are people, and it doesn't matter, you know, that their frame of reference might be different, or they might, you know, been born into a very bad situation, but they have hopes, dreams, aspirations, you know, loves like anyone else. And I've been, since the book came out, and people ask me, you know, how did you get insight into that world? And I kind of think, you know, it's not that far removed from me. And I reflect on my own situation and think, I've had, you know, bad things happen in my life, or I've made bad decisions. And the reason why I haven't ended up in those situations or on the street is really by circumstance, by the fact that I've got family around me, I've got friends who support me, all those things. And there's a significant portion of the community who just don't have that. So one bad break and you're there.
Yeah, and that's certainly the case for this woman. She's had an incredibly tough childhood. She doesn't have a name in this book, Mark. Why not give her a name?
Well, she does have a name.
I know, but, you know, for most of the book, she doesn't have a name.
Most of the book, no. That sort of, it's kind of happened by accident, Claire. I was writing it, and I got about halfway through, and this is in an early draft, and I thought, I haven't really given her a name. And because we're seeing it through her eyes, that first person perspective, in some respects it didn't come up at that stage. But the more I thought about it, I suppose I wanted, one of the things with people in those situations is we can tend to see them as the other, and we put up barriers and we say, you know, oh, the reason we're not like that, or people we care about aren't like that, is because of X, Y, and Z. And I really wanted the reader to be immersed in her world. And I felt as though to give her a name, to make, it would just be another kind of otherness, that she's someone different, you know. And I wanted the reader to see the world through her eyes. And it's been fascinating, because some of the people have read the book, and it's only been out now for a few weeks, of course, but people have read it have said to me, you know, I actually didn't realise that you hadn't named her until the very end, until you reveal her name. And that kind of struck me as well, that they've had that intense experience, I suppose, that I was hoping for. So yeah, it was conscious and unconscious all at once. But I think that the reveal of her name at the end was important too.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned addiction. She's a drug addict, a heroin addict. And there was this passage in the book, Mark, that just, it really was powerful for me. She's talking about people being judgmental about heroin and going, why would you take drugs? The downside is so bad. And she says, for me, the downside is worth it, because downside is probably all I've ever known. Getting high is my only glimpse of the upside. That makes sense. That for me, I had a kind of light bulb moment reading that, Mark.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That sense of escapism, I think that addiction is one of those things that can, you know, like drugs, they're maligned, and there's very good reasons why they're maligned, and they can cause a great deal of social and personal ills. But the use of them and the experience of using them, particularly when your life is kind of, you know, a bit grim, can offer that escape, can offer some relief. Just as, you know, you or I might knock off work for the day and have a glass of wine, or, you know, to relax, that little bit of escapism, that forgetting of our worries, is important. And I suppose with addiction too, I think there's a big socioeconomic component to how we see it. So if it's someone who, you know, let's say a barrister or a surgeon with a cocaine habit who keeps it hidden. You know, they've got the financial means to keep it hidden, but if you're on the street or if you're from a poorer background, you know, it might be window washing that you need to do. It might be begging that you need to do to sustain that habit. And I think addiction, it's of course, it's complicated, but it cuts across all sections of society. And this is just one glimpse of it.
So our hero and Anton is her friend, her partner, they're invited to move into Steve's flat. I don't like Steve, Mark. Who is Steve?
Steve is a figure from Anton, and I'm conscious of spoilers here. But
yes, absolutely. Tell me what you can.
I will. He's a person from Anton's past, and he appears to be quite friendly with Anton, but the main character, she's a little bit suspicious about him from the outset, and it is a little bit unclear about exactly what he's got over Anton. Anton seems a little bit nervous around him, but he offers them a place to stay in his flat, and I guess the connections between he and Anton become a little bit more clear over time, but also Steve's behaviour becomes more intense and erratic. And it's interesting, someone said to me recently, you know, between Wimra and the Rip, I seem to have this kind of fascination with really bad men like Ronnie and Steve. And I was thinking, God, I probably need to be on a chaise lounge somewhere talking about this more than an interview chair. But
yeah. Radio show, either way. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. But I think, look, To be honest with you, I kind of like writing those dark characters, and I've known people like Steve, you know, I've known those people, and they can be a completely charming, charismatic, and just horrible people. You know, their motivations can be extremely malevolent, and I've in my professional life, I've come across people like that, and also just growing up as well, I came across people like that in the pub. So, we'll have to wait and see for my next book as to whether or not another sinister bloke appears.
He's all the more sinister because there's this bad smell, this creepy smell coming from his bedroom. Now, again, I know we're in a spoiler-free zone, but what can you tell me about what is happening in this flat?
Yeah, well, Steve keeps a lock on his door. He's got like a latch on the outside with a padlock, which the main character who, you know, becomes increasingly fixated on this door and the lock, understandably so, because it's a two-bedroom flat and one of the rooms is just shut off constantly, and she's noticing this smell getting worse and worse and becoming more fixated on it. And, it's interesting too, I think, the contrast between the environment in that flat and the one that she was in, which was in the park, sleeping with Anton and Sunny, because it made me reflect on, I guess, our concept of home and what represents home. So I think, you know, when she was offered this place to stay and it's four walls and a roof, we might think, oh, well, that sounds great. You know, you're going to be off the street. That's terrific. But as we see, this is a more unstable and dangerous environment and less like home and less like family than what she had in the park. And I think that, you know, and we see this again and again in our community, our concepts of home. Sometimes home really is the most dangerous place to be when you're around, family, or that can be the most volatile situation. So I think that she starts to question that as well as the book goes on about whether or not they should stay there. But the issue is really exactly how they get out of that situation.
We were talking earlier, Mark, about the fact that this isn't a kind of by-the-book procedural crime novel. And one of the ways that happens is you don't really tie everything up with a bow at the end. Why not?
I am one of those readers who I like in my own reading to have a bit of space to join the dots. And they're the books that tend to stay with me and that I'll reflect on afterwards, and I don't like everything laid out on the page.
Are people frustrated with you though? Has someone come back and gone, Mark, tell me what happened?
Am I getting hate mail? Is that where you're at?
No, I'm just interested to know what your friends have said.
Look, some people certainly do want that, want it all laid out, but I think. People aren't telling me if they're extremely frustrated with it. Perhaps some people are, but I think in Wimmera too, that was true. That there was space there. It's important to me for things to happen off the page as well, and for a reader's imagination to have to do a little bit of work, because when we paint a picture ourselves, when we're given the right prompts to paint that picture, that's what stays with us. And I can. Do as good a job as I can as a writer and, describe a scene or exactly what happened, but I will never, ever do as good a job as a reader's imagination. So as long as I'm giving the right prompts to them and there's enough there, which I think there is, then I'm happy. I'm happy with the work.
Yeah, I'm giving you a hard time, but I figured it out. So congratulations, Mark. It's been really wonderful to talk to you today.
Great. Talking to you, Claire. Thank you.
The Rip is published by Hachette, and this is The Book Show. I'm Claire Nichols.